We're turning again this morning to Romans chapter 4, and a little bit of a continuation of a sermon I did 2 weeks ago before Memorial Day, and I was off doing a college retreat in Wyoming last week. We're going to continue this sermon on Romans 4 that's about life by faith, living by faith. If you'll remember, if you can remember this far back, it's funny to me, in the amount of time it took me to cover the entire book of Revelation, I've covered 3 chapters of Romans. I told you I was going to slow down. But if you can remember, when we started this series, we looked for a long time at Romans 1:17. I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God unto salvation, first for the Jew and then for the Greek. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed by faith. From faith to faith. Therefore, the just shall live by faith. If you remember that, God's righteousness is being revealed. And it is revealed by faith, and it is revealed so that we can live by faith. It's revealed from faith to faith. And those are really the two words that Paul drills into us in Romans, that righteousness comes by faith. Righteousness. Our acceptance, our approval, our resume, God's smile, that all depends upon righteousness, and He's given it to us, and we receive it by faith. So let's go back into this text, and then let's dig in to what it looks like for us to live by faith. Romans 4, begin with verse 18. You can find it in your bulletin or probably in the screen over my head. In hope, he, that would be Abraham, in hope he believed against hope that he should become the father of many nations. As he had been told, so shall your offspring be. He did not weaken in faith when he considered his own body, which was as good as dead, since he was about 100 years old, or when he considered the barrenness of Sarah's womb. No unbelief made him waver concerning the promise of God, but he grew strong in his faith as he gave glory to God, fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. That is why his faith was counted to him as righteousness. Thus far, the reading of God's holy word. A friend of mine, when I lived in Mississippi in the Delta, which is near the river, a friend of mine was an engineer, and his company won the contract to build a bridge over the Mississippi River. That's a cool contract. And so I asked him, I said, so what is step one? I mean, that's a big river. It's just no small task. What is step one to building a bridge over the Mississippi River? And he said this. He said, you sink a barge. That makes sense. You got to have a foundation, right? He said, you sink a barge to a depth of 250 feet below the riverbed. That's deep. I'm thinking, I didn't know you could go below a riverbed, you know, maybe 10 feet, but 250 feet. How do you do that? Well, you have these two big holes in the barge, and you put drills down in the holes, and you pump all the mud out from under the barge, and you just keep it sinking. The Apostle Paul is about to start telling us how to live our life. Romans 5 starts out with a huge word. It starts out with therefore. Therefore, since we've been justified by faith, we have peace with God. He's about to start telling us how to live our life. But before he does that, he buries. I mean, he just drills down this foundation that you must have your feet set upon before you start living, and that foundation is called righteousness by faith. And he drills that down because of this. If you don't understand that you are fully accepted and approved and loved and cherished and wanted, if you don't understand that all of the approval that you seek, all of the acceptance you seek, all the blessing, all the joy, all the love you could possibly want, not from yourself or your family, but from God Himself, If you don't understand that that's given to you, then when you start living, you're going to live to earn it. And if you try to live to earn God's favor, if you try to live to earn His approval, if you try to live to earn your own approval, you'll kill yourself in the process. But, this is great. If you believe that you have it, you're free. And you're free to go make mistakes and make a mess of things. And it doesn't devastate you, right? Base camp, guys, let me tell you something. I almost called you kids. That would have been derogatory, wouldn't it? It tells you how old I am, not how young you are. You know, I was a camp counselor, and I was awful. And as a result of being awful, I didn't go back. And the next summer, I tried even harder to earn God's approval. And so I worked in the inner city because I didn't think working with middle-class kids was going to get enough of God's approval. And so I worked with poor kids, and I was worse. And I threw a basketball at one of them. And it's funny now. But I just, why did I do it? Why did I blow up at the kids I was counseling? Why did I blow up at the kids I was supposed to be helping? Because I was trying to earn God's approval through doing all this. And those stinkers wouldn't help. Didn't they understand that my value as a human depended on them getting better? Well, of course I didn't understand that because that was wrong. But I thought it was true, right? I was trying to earn God's approval by doing good works, by being a good human. And all I was doing was killing myself and them at it, and them at the, in the effort. We do the same thing to our wives, to our husbands, to our children, to our jobs, to ourselves. If we're trying to earn something that's been given to us, we're not living by faith. And we mow over everything in the process. So Paul wants to get this foundation drilled down, and I want to get the foundation drilled down, so I'm going to spend a little time in review before I give you 10 points in one sermon. It's going to be a record. But first, I want you to see this. Paul talks about faith, righteousness, this resume. Righteousness is this resume that we present to God, and He gives us His approval and His acceptance. And as a result of having His approval and acceptance, we approve and accept ourselves. This righteousness is talked about 30 times in Romans 4. And this is what he says. 11 times. He's trying to make a point here. He tells us that this righteousness is credited to us. He uses a bank account information. And he says it's put into our account. And the best example I can think of to get this drilled into you is this, and it's an embarrassing one. I have a letter on my desk at home right now, and it tells me that on May 15th, for the second time in my life, on May 15th, I bounced a check. That's a lot of righteousness out the window right there. And I bounced a check because I had a check go out and the computer world milliseconds before a check came in. That's not here there right now. What matters to you is I didn't have the funds to cover it, right? I was broke, and I wrote a check. And the bank knew I didn't have the funds to cover it, and they knew I was broke, and they rewarded my brokenness by what? By fining me more money. That makes sense. You're broke, so we're going to fine you. And that's sin. That's kind of the way we think of as sin. God finds us. And we go and we throw ourselves on the cross, and He forgives us our sin. The bank did not forgive my fine, though I begged them to. Let's just pretend they did. Let's pretend that at the end of this very gracious phone conversation I had for 30 minutes, she had said, "We forgive you." I still would be what? Broke. I would still have no money in my account. I would just have no fine. And that's kind of what we think God has done. He's forgiven us. He's not holding our sin against us. He's not going to cast us into hell for our sin. But our account is empty. We're still broke. But Paul tells us 11 times in this text that he gives us, he credits us, he accounts to us righteousness. And so the illustration is not simply that he washed away the fine. The illustration is that he has married us. And all of his wealth has become our wealth. So our bank account is now filled with infinite wealth. We're not broke anymore. We can't even add to it because it's infinite. He has accounted to us righteousness. 11 times, 9 times he tells us that we receive it by faith. In other words, nothing that we do adds to it. We receive it by marrying him, by trusting him. When we entrust ourselves to him, all of that righteousness is poured out on us. 3 times he tells us that it's apart from works. You can't earn it. I don't care how good of a counselor, how bad of a wife, how wonderful of a husband, how terrible of a father, how great of a mother. None of that has anything to do with that, what you have in your account. Your account is filled because you've married Jesus. And all of his wealth is in your, all of his righteousness is in your account. Twice he tells us that this righteousness comes apart from circumcision. What does that mean? It means that it has nothing to do with your religious observances. They're good. Religious observances are great. Baptism is important. The Lord's Supper is important. Worship is important. Clearly, I'm up here and you're paying me to be here. So we agree that this is important. But it's important as an after the fact, right? You're not earning God's love. God's not loving you anymore from being here. You're just getting to express it. You're getting to enjoy it. God wants you to come and enjoy all his love. He wants to pour it out upon you. He wants to bet you to bathe in it. And we set aside times like this so we can come and bathe in it. But it's not making God like us anymore. It's not making us like God anymore. It's just giving us a chance to enjoy it. It's apart from our religious observances. 3 times he tells us it's apart from the law. Keeping the law doesn't make God like you anymore. How could it? I mean, when was the last time you got pulled over for going the speed limit? And the policeman says, I'm so proud of you for keeping the speed limit. Here's $50. We don't give speed keeping tickets. Right? We give law breaking tickets. The law can only tell you what you've done wrong. The law only brings punishment. Keeping the law could not possibly earn anything. So 3 times he tells us this righteousness, this resume, comes apart from the law. He jumps on it to tell us finally that it's according to grace, as if it could be according to anything else. And finally he tells us it comes with believing and the death and resurrection of Jesus. All of this wealth is there when we by faith entrust ourselves to him. All of this righteousness, all of this goodness. I'm sorry, I talk about wealth too much. I feel like I'm not going to say I feel like a wealth and health gospel preacher. I'm not going to say that. I'm just going to say I feel bad. So all of this righteousness, all of this approval, all of this acceptance, it all comes when we embrace Christ and we receive him as our husband. Just like Abraham, we have been accounted as righteous for faith. Just like Abraham, we have received righteousness by faith. That doesn't mean you have to have a faith as strong as Abraham's. Abraham's faith wasn't particularly strong. He really, 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 really messed up. That's a sermon that I'm not going to preach to you right now. But it just means you believe the right person. You love the right person. And he pours his love out upon you. And he dresses you in his robes. And now, after we have been made righteous, we live by faith. That's the point of this sermon. The righteous shall live by faith. The righteous should live by faith. No unbelief caused him to waver concerning the promise of God, but he grew strong in his faith as he gave glory to God, fully convinced that God was able to do what he had promised. What does that mean? What does it mean to live by faith? It means that if I believe something strong enough, I'm going to get it. And if I'm not, if there's something out there that I want, just kidding. Y'all know I don't believe that. What it means to live by faith is that God, we live our life knowing that God, the Lord of the universe, the all-powerful creator of space, time, and dimension, he is interested in you. And he is intimately involved in your life. And he notices you. And he is walking alongside of you. And he has given you great and precious promises. And to live by faith means we go and we find what those promises are. And we live according to them. Even when they're things that we don't see. Especially when they're things that we don't see. Especially when they're hard to believe. Trusting that he sees us. And he's going to walk alongside us. You know what's funny? It's funny to see a 40-year-old man go back and get his books off his shelf from grad school. It's a funny thing. You remember, like, when you're in college, you get all these books, right? And you hate them. They're expensive, and you didn't want to pay for them. And somebody's making you read them, and they're making you learn the stuff that's in them, and you don't like it. But you learn it because you're supposed to. It's your 15th major, and so this one's the one you're going to keep. And so you learn the stuff that's in the book, and you put it up on the shelf with a big thud. And you keep that book in your office forever as proof to people who walk in that I know something. And then you're in your job for like 10 years, and a problem comes along. Or you're practicing medicine for 15 years and a surgery comes along that you haven't done in a while. You go and you grab that book and you open it up when nobody's watching and you're thinking, I know I've done this. I've seen this. I've seen this. But nobody's making you do it. And it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. You're like, I remember how to do this. I was taught how to do this. Look, I can do that. That's the kind of exuberance and joy that should come over you as you live the Christian life. We're not trying, having to do it right. Nobody's standing over us, making us do it. We don't have tutors and teachers telling us if we don't do something wrong, they're going to slap our hands. We get to do this. I know how to do this. I know how to live this. And it's fun. And the Lord's right there with us. So what does it look like? What does it look like when we're free to struggle? Let's just go through life. Ready? Finally, that's all introduction. I got 15 minutes left. All right. Children, raise your hand. If you're under the age of 12 or under, raise your hand. What does it mean for you? Are you too young to live by faith? No. What does it mean for you to live by faith? For you to live by faith, I'm not looking at my own children. Right, there's some kids back there. Raise your hand. Can't look at mine. For you to live by faith, what it means is this. It means that you believe that God gave you your parents because he loves you. He loves you. The Lord in heaven, who knows you better than anybody else in the world, gave you your parents because he loves you. And your parents want for you the same things that you want. You want, what do you want? You want a happy life. You want to enjoy things. You want to not get hurt. Those are the things you want. You know what? Your parents want those things for you. They just happen to know that you're not going to be 8 forever. And so to have those things, like having a happy life and to be successful and to enjoy where you're going to be, means doing some things you don't want to do right now. And your parents keep you from doing things and they make you do things that you don't want to do and they keep you from doing things that you don't want to do because they love you. And so right now, living by faith for you looks like obeying your parents. That's loving Jesus. Teenagers. You're not going to raise your hand because you're all afraid, but we know that you're teenagers. Living by faith for you right now looks like this. It means that you stop your ears and you ignore the world that is continually telling you that the only way to be healthy and happy is to be overtly sexual as soon as possible. And you to trust the Lord to live by faith means you close your ears to that and you believe the Bible that tells you that the only way to be happy, that the Lord wants you to be happy. He wants you to enjoy Him. And the way for you to be happy is to trust Him. Is to trust Him. And to by faith keep yourself away from sin and destruction and to work. It means that you don't see sin as an amusement park. It means that you understand that putting off gratification is not a punishment. College students, gee, I wonder where I should look. Ding! College students, what does it mean to live by faith for you? You're going to hate this one. It means this. Living by faith in college means that you're trusting God to guide your paths, which means you are where you are in His providence. He didn't just look down at you and go, I didn't mean for you to be a history major. I wasn't there when you made that decision. I'm serious about this. You're going to think I'm kidding. But the first hard thing that most of us ever did, those of us who went to college, those who didn't go to college, did something hard a lot sooner. They went to work. I'll talk to you in a second. The first hard thing that most of us who went to college ever did was finish our major. And you're going to think to yourself, because it's going to be hard, and in October of your sophomore year is when it's going to get hard, and it's going to stay hard through March of your sophomore year, and you're going to think that you made the wrong choice because it got hard. Living by faith for you probably means believing by faith that God was there when you chose that major, and the best thing, the most mature thing you can do is finish what you started. The only thing you're going to learn in college that still applies to your life when you're 45 years old is finish what you started. We don't really care what you know about history. Do you finish what you start? Make a decision and work hard. Graduation from college. What does faith look like when you go to work? Faith when you go to work means that you believe what God tells you when He tells you that work is part of your being. That work is what you are created to do. That you are created in the image of a God who works. That to work 6 days is the first and most important, probably the most important half of the commandment, to take the Sabbath day off. If you don't work the first six, taking the Sabbath day off, it isn't really cutting much. But you're created to work. And work is not a punishment. And work is not a necessary evil so that you can fund your life of recreation. Work is faith. Work is your way of seeing what you are as being important. God has put you somewhere. He knows where you are. He has got you as a very important part of this huge creation that is glorious. And your part is important. And you fulfill that when you get up and go to work. Read what the Bible says about work and believe it. I know you don't possibly believe that God can be glorified by you going to work and making coffee or cleaning toilets or being the low man on the totem pole. But God tells us to whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. And you have to believe by faith that He sees it. Ignore the call to recreational immaturity. Grow up and go to work. That's how you glorify God. How do you glorify God when people have hurt you? You glorify God by trusting God to take vengeance. Living by faith means you trust God with the vengeance, with the justice, with the getting even. And it means that you trust Him to forgive. Forgiveness has nothing to do with you and the person who sinned against you. Forgiveness has everything to do with you and God. Because when you forgive, you're making yourself vulnerable. When you're forgiving somebody, you're letting go of something valuable to you. Wrath, anger, revenge, those are valuable things to you. That's why you love watching movies about them. That's why you love watching the bad guy get killed at the end of the movie. I saw Jack Reacher the other night. It was awesome. Just killed the guy. No trial for you. Boom. Right?
It's awesome.
Sorry, got to run in for you. The bad guy dies. Shocker. Trusting God, living by faith, means letting go of that. And it means embracing forgiveness. It means that if your enemy is hungry, you feed him. If he's thirsty, you give him something to drink. For by so doing, you heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Forgiveness is an act between you and the Lord to trust him. And it's one that every one of you is going to be required to exercise. What does it mean to live by faith? It means that you're trusting God to forgive. What does it mean to live by faith in marriage? Husbands, living by faith in marriage means that this is the woman the Lord wants you to love. Now you know. Before you get married, you don't know. Right? Before you get married, there's 2.5 billion women out there. I don't know which one I'm supposed to love, but once you are married, you know. So love her. So pursue her. So find life in her. What does Proverbs tell us? Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer and a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Always be intoxicated with her love. I'll be honest, there's some commandments in the Bible I don't like. I kind of dig this one. But it's a command. You are commanded to be intoxicated with the love of your wife. So go get drunk on her love. Be courageous enough to... What does it mean to live by faith? It means even when your wife has hurt your feelings for years, you are courageous enough to pursue her and to go after her and trust God that he has your best interest in mind and he knows you. It means you lead your wife to the throne of grace. Wives, what does it mean to trust God? What does it mean to live by faith in marriage? It means you submit to your husbands. Some of you are terrified to do that because you've never tried. You insist on being the primary decision maker, and if you're not the decision maker, you're the powder until you get what you wanted. God bless you. You're missing out. You're missing out on what it feels like to be loved. Trusting the Lord means trusting your husband. And it means that you learn what he is like and you find out how to love him. Trust, living by faith means loving the person you're married to. If you're single, what does it mean to live by faith? Living by faith means that God hasn't forgotten you and you don't believe that he's forgotten you. And you don't think that you're less of a human because you're single. You don't think you're somehow on hold, a lady in waiting. You're not waiting, right? You're not half a person until you get married. Live your life. Ask yourself, Lord, what is it that I can do? How can I bless you? How can I do something for your kingdom? How can I bless this world as a single person? What can I do that a married person could not do? He's got you single for a reason, and that reason is because he loves you. Don't think that he's mad at you. Don't think that when you get everything right, he'll bring you a spouse. He's not the answer that you think he is. Living by faith means believing what the Apostle Paul says when he says, I wish that every one of you were single like me. It's a better life. Don't believe the lies of the world that tell you that you are less than human if you're not romantically fulfilled. That the world tells you that because they have no idea how much Jesus can fill you. Believe them. Believe him. Living by faith in childlessness. What do you do if you can't have children? I want to be tender here. This is a hard church to be in. Some of you are going to laugh when I say this, and it's okay. It's kind of funny. But this is a hard church to be in if the Lord has not given you children. We've got children under every seat. That's not how you get them, but you don't get them by sitting down. But what does it mean to live by faith if the Lord has not given you children? It means that you don't believe that he's angry with you. You don't believe that somehow you've done something that if you could just get it right, he would give you children. You don't build resentment toward him. Rather, you know that he loves you. He loves you so much, he's given you his only son. He's not sparing you anything good. And you get to ask yourself, Lord, what can I do without children that I could not do if I had them? Why do you have me single? Ask him why and seek how he's going to sanctify this. Believe that you're complete without children. Please, believe that you are complete without children, because there is nothing less fair to a human being than to put upon them the pressure of having to complete you. If you are incomplete until you have a child, I pray for your child. He just needs to be a little boy. He doesn't need to be the resting place of all your hopes and dreams. He just needs a safe place to mess up. That's all he needs. He doesn't need to know that every mistake is going to shatter you. And don't expect that grace to come then. Start living into it now. Start living into it now. Fight the discontentment with the belief that God loves you. He loves you. And he's given you his son. What does it mean to live by faith when you're rearing children? It means that you have embraced God's love so much that you can tolerate your child's scorn. Because you believe by faith that what the Bible tells you when it says, whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves his son is diligent to discipline him. What's it saying? You don't love your kids if you don't discipline them. You just don't. You love yourself. And you're so afraid of their disapproval that you're afraid to love them. So you love yourself and you do whatever you can to get their approval. And I say that to everyone who's raising kids. I can tell you, when I was a young father, nothing about me young anymore. But when I was a young father, it was an act of faith to bear the scorn of my 4-year-old. And my wife and I talk to each other all the time. We're not going to let him intimidate us. We're talking about somebody this tall. He was intimidating. Intimidating. He's not that tall anymore. You can't let your children intimidate you. You have to love them too much to let them intimidate you. It means you have to have the courage to be vulnerable and tell them when you've made mistakes. What does it mean to live by faith as you suffer pain and grief and loss? It means believing that God is big enough for you to be angry at. And it means believing his promise when he says the Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. What does it mean to go through pain and grief and loss with the Lord in faith? It means sometimes you look at the Lord and say, why did you do that? Were you not paying attention? Sometimes it just means crying in his presence. Usually it means crying on the shoulder of the people that God has put around you, because that is how he surrounds you with his presence. And it means you cry as hard as you can and as often as you have to. It means you believe that God understands you. He knows what it feels like to be in your shoes. He knows what it feels like. This is mind-blowing when you let it truly affect you. God himself knows what it feels like to watch his own son be captured by evil men and be killed. He knows what that feels like. And he can heal you. And it means that you believe in the resurrection. You believe that God can raise even somebody who's dead. And you expect him to bless the mourning. And finally, for those of you who are going into your later years, what does it mean to trust God with your health as you see it declining, as your stinking body starts to betray you? It means that you don't waste your sickness. And you don't believe anyone who would tell you that you are of less value or there's less that you can do. One of my favorite stories, as you all know, oh too well, from Mississippi, is of Libba Dean. Libba Dean used to sit right there where Bruce is sitting today. And Libba, in her later years, was about this big because she had withered away with a form of arthritis that caused her limbs to wither, and her arms and legs were completely useless by the time that I knew her. And every Sunday, Libba would bless me. She would ask me how she could pray for me. And one Sunday, one afternoon, my wife went to visit Libba. And she said, Libba, you're not your chipper self today. You seem kind of down. Is there something wrong? And Libba said, well, you may notice that it's 10:30 in the morning and I'm not dressed yet. I get kind of tired of waiting for someone to come dress me every morning. We asked how long had she been in long-term care. And she said she'd been at that wing of the hospital for 13 years. 13 years of waiting to be dressed, of waiting to be taken to the bathroom, of waiting to be cleaned. 13 years. And when Libba went to the hospital, her pastor came to visit her, and she was weeping because she believed that her ministry was over. And she'd been the headmaster of the local Christian school, and she couldn't believe that her ministry was done, and she couldn't understand why the Lord would take her away from her ministry. And pastor said, well, I don't know either, Libba, but I know this. And he read to her from 2 Peter 1:8, if these qualities increase in you, you will be fruitful. You will be fruitful. And he said, you're going to have to trust that promise. And that's the promise I give to you for those of you who are waning in your later years and you're sick. You will be fruitful if you continue to pursue the Lord and add these qualities of blessing to your life. And I can tell you this, when Libba died, it's the most people I've ever seen in that sanctuary at a funeral. And I can tell you that nurses, more than one, came to my pastor and said, how can I know the Jesus that Libba Dean knew? And God's true to his promise. Even when you can't see him. That's what it means to live by faith. I'm sorry I can't give you more specifics. And some of you want them. We all want specifics. We want to be told, tell me exactly how often I'm supposed to feed my child. Tell me exactly who I'm supposed to marry. Tell me exactly what job I'm supposed to take. Tell me exactly what town I'm supposed to live in. Tell me exactly. And Jesus says, no. Now, there are those who will tell you. There are those who will tell you that God's going to tell you exactly. And he won't. And they're lying to you. But there's all kinds of legalisms out there on every spectrum. That's not living by faith. If God told you exactly, it would be living by sight. Live by faith. Trust him to meet you there. Trust him to lead you when you can't see him. And so we go from faith to faith. Please pray with me.